Chai FM, Eye on Terrorism, exclusively on Chai FM.
Good morning, David. Harris, how are you?
Good morning, intensely jealous.
Let me tell you something. It was really a very, very special evening last night. David, let's get to your area of speciality. I mean, you could hear Dina's area of speciality was these gourmet meals. But Hezbollah, 11 years after the war.
Indeed, it's 11 years since what became known as the Second Lebanon War, which, if you remember, began when two Israeli soldiers were taken from the border in an attack by Hezbollah. Of course, several of their comrades fell at the scene. Both of the two who were taken had also died at the scene, but their bodies were held and nobody knew if they were alive or not. 11 years later, yesterday in Beirut, thousands of Hezbollah supporters gathered together to mark this anniversary, and that was an opportunity for Hassan Nasrallah, the leader of Hezbollah, to make one of his speeches. He is still, he still doesn't make public appearances. You can count on one hand the number of public appearances he's made since 2006. He spoke from his bunker, and amongst the things that he said was that Hezbollah could one day strike at Dimona, which is the site of Israel's nuclear reactor, allegedly.
Crazy. Okay, so where are they going? Are they still so fractionalized?
So Hezbollah itself is a very strong, united organization. You don't hear the same types of things that you do with Hamas, with different leaders, fighting for power and so on. The leadership is very centralized, and the commanders carry out the instructions from the military head, from the religious head, and so on and so forth. What is interesting with Hezbollah, as far as Israel is concerned, and we've still got to talk about the border consequences for the region with everything that's happening with ISIS in Syria, but in terms of Israel, the amount of strength that Hezbollah has in Lebanon does wane a little bit. I think it's fair to say that Hezbollah is the strongest military force in Lebanon, despite UN Resolution 1701, which saw the end of the war and called for a demilitarized Hezbollah. But they're still the strongest force. And whilst perhaps they don't have tanks, they still have pretty much every other weapon in their arsenal. They have very strong governmental power and are, I would argue, the major player in terms of politics as well as military in Lebanon. So they're a force to be feared, and I would say if you wanted to prioritize who Israel's main enemies are, I would certainly put Hezbollah as a far stronger unit than Hamas.
Very interesting. Earlier this morning, I was actually speaking to our Israel correspondent, Anthony Reich, and he was talking about how Israeli information, intel, has said that Iran is wanting to move into areas that ISIS no longer occupy. And that's hugely concerning, considering that Iran is the number one funder of global terrorism.
Yeah, this has already happened in Iraq, not just in the absence of ISIS, but in the absence of a really strong Iraqi army as well. The Iranians, we've talked for many years about the idea of a Shiite crescent, a band that would stretch all the way to the sea at Lebanon and Syria, and reaching all the way to Iran at the other side of it. And that's exactly what we're seeing happening now, in reality. That you could pretty much draw a Shiite line all the way through, which is controlled by, either directly the Iranian army, the IRGS, the Revolutionary Guards Corps, the Quds forces, and of course Hezbollah, which has a major say not only in what's happening in Lebanon, but also in Syria as well. So yeah, we're really seeing that. And as ISIS crumbles, the question is, who is going to fill that void? And let's face it, the way things are right now, if that void is filled by Assad and the Syrian army, that's tantamount, as things stand right now, to the Iranians also being on Israel's borders.
Mm. Just before I let you go, David, one of the stories that you are actually featuring on the clarionproject.org website is after Charlottesville, reject all extremism. Is it a surprise, the, you know, seeing the Nazi flags flying in the south?
No, absolutely not. Let me talk about this in the terms of Islamism, because what happened in Charlottesville and so on is more, shall we say, left versus right. But as we know, given people like Linda Sarsour and so on, that there is this Islamist element in all of this. Something that we as an organization have made very, very clear for many, many years is the following. If you are soft on Islamists, you will end up with a very vocal and violent far right. And that is what we're seeing in the United States right now. If you are not careful about who you let into the country, and I'm not talking about banning Muslims from entering the United States, if you stop Islamists, radicals, from entering the country, then the arguments against Muslims will dissipate, will reduce, and therefore right-wing sentiment and right-wing actions and even the killing of people like we saw yesterday will go down as well. So you've got to tackle both the Islamist problem and the far-right problem at the same time, because that's two sides of the same coin.
All right, and that's where we leave it this week. David Harris, thank you so much. Look forward to speaking to you next week, and with good news. Maybe next week we can discuss menus and things like that.
As we say in this, in the Arab world, inshallah, you know, may that be the God's will.
Thank you so much. God bless. Take care. Bye bye.
Take care. Bye bye.
Right. That's David Harris. He is the editor in chief at the Clarion Project. Go and check out their website. It's clarionproject.org.